you raised, I'm going to talk to in some degree, and I think that some of my work will build on work that you've discussed already. So it's a good sequence. This is better. It's a good sequence of events. I just want to make clear, I'm with the California Department of Public Health, and a lot of you are from California, so I'm with the Champions for Change Network for Healthy California. That might be meaningful to some of you. And we do have a lot of data and resources and programs on our website, which might be of interest to many, many of you. Okay, I don't have any relationships to disclose. I also want to add on that this project is conducted with resources from the Network for Healthy California. The data and everything were purchased for program reasons. The analysis was actually conducted as part of a doctoral dissertation and not funded by the network. Okay. Is it this one? Okay. So what I wanted to look at in this paper is the contributions of the built food environment, which is all of the retail food outlets in an area, area demographics, inequality, which I discuss as racial segregation and income inequality or concentrated poverty, and individual factors. A lot of BMI is clearly related to individuals. You have a genetic component you just can't avoid in the research. So I wanted to put it all together and see, you know, kind of where things fell out. When you look in the literature, it's often there's really interesting theoretical arguments for sprawl, there's interesting theoretical arguments for inequality, there's interesting arguments for food availability. So if you could put them all together, how do they shake out when you're looking at everything at the same time? Oops, wait, this one? Okay. And I'm doing this with kind of a structural argument. I'm not focusing on individuals at all. A structural argument probably, when I give this talk to other audiences, this is probably a lot more relevant than to an environmental section. But looking at a structural issue is relevant for a lot of social problems. It's used for crime, and I hear people talking about disorder, and that's great. For education, and educational disparities, differences in educational completion, for teen pregnancy. The main point here, though, is that these structural explanations expand upon individual explanations. They don't replace them. It's all part of looking at the individual within a context, and that the context is something that creates or inhibits opportunity, and that this context, this environmental context, is not, it didn't just appear. It's there because of other social processes that made it appear. And so since it is part of a social process, the environment can be as changeable as the individual factors. Okay, I'm going to skip over a lot of the sprawl argument because Gina already covered it very well. But if you download the presentation, here are some other citations. But in general, the sprawl argument for BMI is that as sprawl has increased, BMI has increased, and one reason for this is that utilitarian physical activity has been replaced by cars and by sedentary activities. Okay. But I do want to point out that there are theoretical and empirical studies that link inequality and food availability and sprawl all together. Okay. And then the food availability, this is just a brief reference list. There's many, many others, but these are just some that I like. That food availability and income inequality are related at a structural level, not necessarily just do you have enough money to buy food, but are there places to buy food where people who don't have a lot of money live, and what kinds of food outlets are they? Okay. And just an example of an individual one is that people who eat at fast food restaurants tend to eat fewer fruits and vegetables and have less positive eating habits. So this is just an example of an empirical example of how the food environment can influence individuals' consumption, which would influence body mass index. Okay. So as I said, the food outlets, the reasons that they're there, it's not neutral. It's not, they didn't just appear. It's not a natural process. There are economic and demographic factors that shape the placement of food in the environment. This is grounded in historically in racial segregation, income segregation, and we do see that highly segregated communities that have poor nutrition environments, poor recreational environments, do have higher rates of obesity. And this is a review from actually an urban planning journal that I thought was really interesting. Okay, and probably many of you are familiar with Kimberly Moreland's work with supermarkets and inequality. Okay, and actually my background is sociology, so this is why I bring in a lot of inequality and issues. That income and racial inequality alone are responsible or can be attributed to increased BMI and weight gain. So just disadvantage alone does have an effect. So here you have, you know, these three kind of pieces of a puzzle. How do they fit together? What do you get? My analysis is actually just on California, and I looked at California alone for a few reasons. One is California is really large, and we do have our own surveillance systems, so there are many places to draw data from. But in practice, people who are working with the health departments tend to draw on the California-specific numbers. We don't follow national data so much and assume that it's happening in California. We tend to assume that California is probably driving the edge of the numbers, probably like on one of the extremes for a lot of issues. California also has some of the lowest racial segregation of any place in the country. So questions about how important is race might be very different in California than in other places. And California also has some of the highest income inequality and concentrated poverty than in other parts of the country. In fact, there is a report from the Brookings Institute that showed that every other state had a decrease in concentrated poverty, and California had experienced an 87% increase in concentrated poverty. So when you have the poverty, and then you have our exacerbated by extreme housing costs, and then California has one of the lowest food stamp participation rates in the country, possibly you have disadvantaged populations that are experiencing disadvantage in a different way from other people in the country. So the data I use are from the BRFS from California, and I pooled 2005, 6, and 7 for counties in California. There were 14,205 individuals in my study, and I used body mass index as the outcome measure, and then individual demographics as kind of control variables. And I did this for 33 counties in California. The ones that are not included are usually the smaller, more rural counties that BRFS didn't have an adequate sample even when I pulled data across the years. So for the 33 counties, I have retail information. I have retail information that's from a purchased market database from Dun & Bradstreet. I have demographics from the U.S. Census, a sprawl index that's from the Smart Growth America project, but I just have the California. So that particular index is standardized to the country, but I'm extracted California. And I have racial segregation indices that I use that are from a project at the University of Michigan, and it has a website. You can go there and pull off racial segregation indices for all the major, for all the racial ethnic distinctions in the U.S. Census, and it's for the entire country. And you can pull off a county or a state or the whole country. Okay, and to do this, so you're saying I have two different data sets here. What I'm looking at is individuals nested within their county, people in a county. And I do this using hierarchical linear models. I used HLM software. Someone could do a similar analysis using a mixed models with SAS. But the reason I use this approach is because it focuses the statistical explanation on the main effects of the food system in the county, and it compares across counties. So it focuses on the environment and not the individuals. And I use kind of a small area analysis approach. You know, BRFS is usually weighted to the state, but this approach is described in GIA et al. If anyone's interested. If you have the county census demographic information, or other kinds of whatever level of aggregation you're interested in, and you put them in the what we call the level 2 or the environmental model, it acts as a weight so that you can By using this approach, we can use the BRFS data in kind of new ways. Okay, and this is my overall model. It looks really horrible, but if anyone's ever used the HLM software, it's actually very, you just kind of click all your models into place and it comes out. Somebody mentioned looking at disadvantaged people in advantaged neighborhoods, and this is an example of how you could do that. You, let's see, I'll just point. You can do what's called a cross-level interaction, and you can like link in like racial segregation at the county level to black at the individual level, or you can look at living in a poverty area at the county level to personal income at the individual level to kind of tease out some of those relationships. But the main point here is this is think as what we're doing is looking at the individual factors kind of not really filtered, but expressed through the environmental components. Okay. Okay. So I ran this first looking at food availability, then looking at sprawl, and then kind of putting it all together. And again, the outcome variable is BMI rather than percent overweight or percent obese. I'm actually using BMI. When you have a two-level model like this, one of the things you can calculate is how much variance is at the environmental level and how much variance is at the individual level. And I always think it's very interesting to compare. When this is done at the county level, 2.3% of the total variance is between counties. So not a lot, but at the same time, you're looking at something that everybody is experiencing. So the effects can still be strong. Okay, and I don't want to get too much into this, but you see that there are, I just want to explain, I'm using the proportion of the total food environment. So the percent convenience stores is what percent of the percent of convenience stores out of the total food environment, the percent of fast food restaurants out of the total food environment, the percent of chain restaurants. And I'm looking at, these are the kinds of food outlets that health professionals tend to want to intervene in, so that's why they're in here. Outlets that are also included but not analyzed are things like co-ops, butchers, bakeries, you know, other kinds of specialty food stores, coffee shops. Okay. So when you look at this, you do see a strong positive coefficient for convenience stores and fast foods, nothing for chain restaurants, a very small negative relationship with supermarkets and grocery stores, but still significant. A larger one for independent restaurants and delis, and nothing for fruit and vegetable markets. Okay, and this model, I should mislabel the first column is fruit the food availability, and then the second column is sprawl, and the last column is the percent of total variance explained. So in looking at this one, the percent of convenience stores, you have 18.34 is the coefficient for the percent of convenience stores. And sprawl is not significant until you get down to supermarkets, independent restaurants. And maybe you noticed, but some of the coefficient signs are changing, so things that used to be positive or negative. When you add food availability with sprawl together, things change. Let's see. But this is the model I think is actually the most important here, which again, the first column is food availability still. I haven't mislabeled. But you have strong effects for convenience stores, fast food, and chain restaurants, strong positive effects that increase BMI. And at the same time, counties with high proportions as convenient in a county, as the convenience store proportion goes up, BMI goes up. But then as the sprawl would go up, the BMI would go down. So part of that is because really interactions with race and income and demographics. And in this model, I added in 130% of the federal poverty level to get a sense of concentrated poverty. And you see that poverty always has a very has a significant and fairly strong coefficient effect. And in these, I think someone actually mentioned sprawl before having a smaller coefficient. And in, I'm seeing that here too, this, the inequality and the food food availability coefficients do tend to be, you know, much larger. But at the same time, the sprawl is still significant. And you do need to consider this at what you're looking at in environment is a one effect that a lot of people are experiencing, maybe in a small way, but it does have a broad reach. Okay, so in general, we have independent restaurants, supermarkets, and grocery stores had kind of a protective effect for BMI. Fast food, convenience stores, chain restaurants has a hazardous relationship. And I also want to point out that the strength of the hazardous relationships is much stronger than the protective effects offered by grocery stores and supermarkets, which I think is kind of interesting. Poverty is consistently associated with higher BMI, and it's stronger than sprawl. And sprawl does have a significant effect. Okay. And the next steps, I'm planning to replicate this with census tract data for LA County. The data exists. There's enough sample size. There's enough variance. But I'm having one of many, many, many administrative hurdles to actually get access to the data, because when you get to census tracts, you get a lot of HIPAA violation potential. So I'm kind of fighting through that, but hopefully once we do, we'll have a lot more access to just kind of analysis in the future for counties in California. So thank you.
Stand up here. You have a couple minutes for your questions. And then, thank you. That was excellent. Questions? You want to stand up and identify yourself and ask a question for this last presentation, then we'll go into group discussion. Stand up, sir.
To do it before, yeah.
Yeah, it's a ratio between fast foods, convenience stores divided by the number of supermarkets, fresh produce stores. It's kind of gaining popularity as using it as an index to gauge the availability.
Yeah, I was looking at that, and I mean, one of the issues is you have to make sure that what you're putting in the top of the fraction actually, or what you're considering a negative influence really is a negative influence, and what is a positive influence really is a positive one, so that you can, you know, get a good comparison. And so I have fiddled around with that. One issue that I'm coming up with is that, I don't know if everybody knows, like that fruit and vegetable markets, which seem like they'd be a really good thing, have a very, like a non-significant effect. And I think, for example, that is due to sample size. There's not as many fruit and vegetable markets, and same thing with farmers markets. They're just not really represented in this kind of data. So, but yes, an index really does give a much more concise definition. And when I put together one called a BMI foods, like things like the food stores that increase BMI, and then actually I got very strong effects all the way across.
Questions for Jennifer? Yes, please stand up.
Actually, I didn't measure it. I got it. Maybe people have seen the report. The
Measuring effects of sprawl.
Measure the health effects of sprawl by redoing a Barbara McCann. So I just emailed them and asked if I could have the data.
And do you know what the measurements are?
Yeah, it's actually, I think, 28, maybe someone else knows too, but like 28 components, but it includes things like mixed use, density,
block size,
land and water area, and they have a very thorough documentation report where you can actually pick out, you know, which of these variables, you know, what are the variables and where they get them, and you can put them together. It's a county level index. Or actually, it might even be a...
There's two. There's a county level and there's a
metropolitan
area.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to figure out, you have a very small coefficient, and I'm trying to figure out how you translate it, that into something, how do you make meaning out of that? What are the units and how
yeah.
do you think about how that translates?
Well, when you put all this together, like this is why I put it on the same model, because then you can at least see things at the county level. My units would be a county level of analysis. So you do have to consider that you're looking at counties in California, which probably do have similar amounts of sprawl, so you're not seeing a lot of variance because California has had a similar growth pattern across the state since the 60s. So which has a sprawl model, we don't have a growth pattern that we're starting to get more of an infill growth and things like that. But it's really about variance and how much variance there is from county to county to county. And if you took that measure and looked at it nationally, you probably would get more variance. So you'd have better coefficients.
So you would interpret it as a one-unit change in sprawl between counties is correlated with a one-unit change in BMI? Is that how you
yeah, roughly.
How
yeah.
You
yeah.
Yeah.
Gina?
My question is actually related to that. The sprawl score, I think the same one, it's ranges from 0 to 100, I believe.
It's... The mean is set at 100, I think.
It's
standardized to 100, and then
the lower score is the smaller sprawl, right?
Yeah, the lower
right,
lower score.
So when you get those negative associations, it's actually more compact areas have lower BMI. The smaller units there where you have I think you're right. I think it's a mean of 100 and a standard deviation of 25. I wonder if the percentage of the food environment variable that you're using has a range from 0 to 1.
It does.
Large coefficients are representing
that's a really good point.
An extrapolation beyond the range of your sample. You might think about
that's a good point.
If you really want to make those comparisons across the different exposures.
That's a really good point.
We need to have a workshop on all this stuff.
It's tricky measurement. You know, it's a lot of different fields. Anyway, that's a really good point. Thank you.
Well, we have several minutes to spend finalizing. I just want to say, I mean, for the last day of a conference, this just indicates to me that obesity in the built environment is like, I'm a golfer, the sweet spot. We're getting into these things, not just physical activity, but also the food system. And you can go on and on with these topics. I'm very excited that you all are here. And please stay around. If you have some finalizing questions, we can bring back any of the speakers, Rusaki, Gina, Tricia, and Jennifer. They'd be happy to answer a final question or two, or get you out in time for your 30-minute lunch or my 30-minute lunch before I go do climate change in the environment. So fire away. Exactly.
A1Cs and translate within clinical data that relate to really the outcomes of chronic disease related to eating.
Well, even the cytokine levels and things like that that are reflections of your immune system, because exercise, for example, changes your immune system and, is anti-inflammatory. So come on, folks, this is good stuff. You know, I mean, it's going to make a big difference on a lot of your chronic disease outcomes. So we've got a lot we can do that nutrition and weight and physical activity all sort of interact with. Plus, then you have the stress mechanisms. So I think we're really talking, as you say, across disciplines very much. And then the built environment is sort of right in the middle of many, many different possible interventions. There was a question in the back. I think, sir, you had a...
I was actually just going to follow up on that. I really don't know.
Please. One segment of unnatural causes about the healthy immigrant effect was, I thought, very, very, very powerful. And for any of you that didn't get to see it, I think it's available on YouTube even to download some of the segments.
Can I respond also? I think in addition to looking at the clinical outcomes, we shouldn't dismiss any effects on the behavioral
course,
outcomes that
course.
Don't then translate into BMI changes. I think we know that there has to be a lot of movement in physical activity levels in order to change BMI, and any environmental change that makes physical activity more prevalent, makes a diet healthier, even if it doesn't get translated into a BMI decrease, or, you know, I think that we know because of other clinical outcomes that are important that those behaviors themselves are worthy outcomes.
Change the culture. We're trying to change the culture, folks. I mean, that's what we did with tobacco. It's systems change. Well, I mean, I think we're basically 12 o'clock. Y'all have been a great audience. Please leave your surveys. Thank you very much. Give yourself a round of applause. Our speakers were wonderful. Yeah, well, I'll try to...